Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Garrett will clear it to the other side for Mark Howe. Howe coming up on the right side. Howe over the line to his father. Son to father. Backhand shot. He scores! Number nine, Father Howe. And number five, Mark Howe. And the crowd appreciates that.
Welcome back to Glenn Macnow and Ray Dinger. It is Saturday at noon, time for Tell Us Your Story, sponsored by Meridian Bank, one of the area's best business banks. Learn why at meridianbanker.com. Our guest today, you know, the Flyers have retired just six numbers in the 50-plus year history of the franchise. Among them is the number two, worn by Hall of Famer Mark Howe, starred for 10 years with the team, helping them get to two Stanley Cup finals. Ray, I watched all those seasons. I don't think I ever saw Mark Howe make a mistake. Mark also happens to be the son of Gordie Howe, arguably the greatest player in the history of the NHL. Welcome, Mark, and let's start there. You were born in 1955. Your dad, then age 26, had already won two MVPs and four Stanley Cups. At what age did you realize, Gordie's kind of a big deal?
I don't know. I think it was, probably around the age of maybe seven or eight. I think, other than that, we used to go to the Christmas parties. I used to go to some games, and, you know, my brother Marty and I, we always played together. So we were busy playing our games. But, I think when you start, getting a little more awareness of what's going on around you, that's when it kind of really set in. So, I mean, everybody wanting his autograph everywhere you went, didn't matter, what city, what state, what country, he was well known around, all of North America for sure.
Well, I remember reading, an interview you did, and someone asked basically the same question, but what was it like? What were your memories of being the son of Gordie Howe? And you said the night that stands out in your mind was November the 10th, 1963. You were just 8 years old, and that was the night that your dad scored goal number 545 to pass Rocket Richard. And he did it at the Detroit in the Olympia. And I remember you saying you thought the ovation would never end, that it just went on and on and on. And you thought how cool it was to be the only person in the building who could say, yep, that's my dad.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, I was sitting in section seven. So, actually 3 weeks prior, dad had scored against Montreal at home to tie the record. And then, I think the pressure got on. He went into about a 3 week drought, and then he scored again against Montreal. And yeah, I was there for both. But that's my fondest memory in all of hockey. So to sit there and experience something like that. And I know the people in Detroit, when Dad was in his final year and Scotty Bowman picked him to play in the All-Star game in Detroit, the ovation there was great. And I wasn't there for that, but there's no way that it could have superseded, what took place back in 64.
So, Mark, you started playing hockey at age 10, 11. You're playing with your older brother, Marty, on the Detroit Rooster Tails. You're in international peewee tournaments, junior hockey for the Detroit Junior Red Wings. I mean, pretty high-level hockey for a kid. Did your dad come to your games? What was it like having number nine in the stands at your games?
Yeah, well, let's see. Well, let's see. I started skating at two. My first first team I played on, I was 4 years of age, and you know, we played for a couple of years, and then my mom was instrumental in getting Triple A teams organized in the Michigan area, mostly Detroit, and you know, and then we played a couple of years, you know, I think within the state. And then after that, we ventured out and got into Southern Ontario and, you know, got against the Canadian competition, which, you know, we got our butts beat for a couple of years till we learned how to compete with them. And, it was hard for Dad to attend games. I know he made some practices when he could, but, yeah, he would make some games, but it was my mom's responsibility to get us around, and just because of scheduling and with Dad playing and stuff. But whether he was there or not, there was always a cloud over you that wherever you went. I remember going to Quebec City, and I think I was 9 or 10 at the first time I went, and it's always, oh, Gordie Howe's sons are here. And so you go in the Le Colisée, and there's, I think it held 14, 15,000. Wow, when you're 9 years old and you got all these people yelling and screaming, it is very intimidating. And, I mean, what a great tournament that is and still is to this day. And, but you went there, you played, and like I said, I appreciated more when Dad could come to practice, because then he could come on the ice with us. And, you know, I think after it was difficult for Dad, even when he came to games, you know, people were usually hounding him for autographs. So it was tough for him to attend and actually to watch. And, but when you're playing, hey, you're just out, you're thinking about your job, what you're trying to do. And I was such a competitive little brat. I'm focused on what I had to do, and actually I played my whole career that way. You don't think of who's in the stands, who's doing what, and I had to maintain my focus to try and be at my best.
You know, focused, obviously, because I was looking up some of your junior stats, but you're 15 years old. Your team won the U.S. Junior Championship, and you had 107 points in 44 games, so I'd say that's pretty focused. And then when you were 16, you made the U.S. Olympic team to go to play in the Winter Olympics in Sapporo, Japan. And, you know, everybody kind of talks about the U.S. Olympic team and the U.S. hockey program, and they always immediately think about Lake Placid in 1980. But you guys pulled off something pretty special 1972 in Japan, where you guys, I think you were seeded like 6th or 7th, and you went to Sapporo and won the silver medal. And you did that as a 16-year-old. That must have been quite an experience.
I ended up being on that team by accident. What happened was I was supposed to go play junior hockey in Toronto that year, but the season before I hurt my knee. They thought it was a ligament damage that would heal. And over the course of summer, I tried to rehab it, worked on it, did fine, and then it kept popping out on me. And what it was I had torn cartilage, and it would flip into the joint every once in a while. So then I had to have knee surgery. If I didn't have the knee surgery, I would have been up in Toronto receiving $10 a week. So therefore I would have been ineligible to play.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what happened was, and back in the day, I mean, I got a scar on my leg that's about 7-8 inches long. And, for now it's just a simple scope. You walk out of the hospital and you're done. And, but it was a 2.5-3 month rehab situation. And actually my first game back was, just before Christmas. I remember we were going to play an exhibition game against the Olympic team at the Olympia, and that was kind of my target date. I worked really hard to get back so I could just play against those guys. And I was horrible. They must have thought I was decent, but I got invited out to Minnesota to try out for one of those spots. And, yeah, it was for a small role on the team. What a great experience for a 16-year-old kid, and great learning experience. It was the first time I saw the Russians play. I knew how good they were, and you never heard about the Swedes or the Finns or the Czechs, and man, they were awesome hockey players as well at that stage. So it was a great learning experience for me, and to walk away, it's not like the Olympics nowadays. So it was more of a get into round robin. And it's the best record wins, second best record, gets silver medal. And, we ended up winning, a couple of key games, especially the one head-to-head with the Czechs. The one we needed to win where, you know, our goalie Lefty Kern, it was outstanding for the first maybe 20, 30 minutes of that game. And, yeah, we walked away with a silver medal. I still have it hanging in the house here. So it was, yeah, pretty proud moment. And, you know, it was the first time I ever had a chance to represent my country, USA. So that was another great thing, too.
Well, you played, I mean, and again, you're 16 years old and you're playing. I looked at the Russian roster. I mean, they got Tretiak, they got Karlamov, they got Maltsev, they got grown men whose name became familiar here. And then, again, still a kid, I think you're 18 years old, you and Marty decide you're going to play in the WHA. The Houston Aeros approach you. And as I have heard the story, they come to talk to you and to Marty. And your dad's already retired for I'm not sure how long. And was it your dad's idea? Was it Houston's idea that, like, let's get all three of them? How did that go down?
Well, it came about, Bill Dineen was coach and general manager of the Houston Aeros at the time, and he was up at the Memorial Cup where Marty and I were members of the Toronto Marlboros a year before. My mom and dad were at those games, and I was fortunate. We won. We had a great, great team. As good a junior team I think it's ever been assembled. But I was fortunate enough. I won the MVP of the tournament. And so, I mean, I probably had three of my better games that I had all year. And Bill Dineen sought out my parents and said, hey, you know, we're in the WHA. You know, we're going to try to have this new thing where we can draft kids that are under 20 years of age, because you had to be had to be 20 at the time to get in the NHL. And they said, under NCAA rules, you're considered a professional, so we're going to draft Mark and Marty in the professional draft. There was a little bit of an uproar, but Houston pulled it off, and then they came to our home in Bluefield Hills, Michigan, and they sat down at a table and they started negotiations. And obviously my dad must have talked to my mom prior, but the words came out of his mouth. He said, how would you like to have a third how? And that was it. So Marty and I laughed.
He hadn't told you before.
I hadn't told us. And all I knew is he played probably 50, 60 alumni games each year. And he was, you know, he was a physical specimen as a human being anyway. But it was funny because Marty's contract, my contract and negotiations just got pushed to the side of the table. And the talk became about Gordy. So Marty and I got up and left. We said, Mom, you can handle it from here. So, when you're 18, like, you know, I guess it's tough to be focused and in negotiations like that. Like I said, with my mom there and with my dad, I knew they had our backs. And you know, as it turned out, so we go down to Houston. I don't know, a couple months later, we have our first training camp. It's 105 degrees out and 100% humidity, and it was hard. Marty and I had been skating for a month because we ran a hockey school in Detroit, and we were on the ice 8 hours a day, 6 days a week for 4 weeks. So, I mean, I was flying. Dad hadn't been out very much, and I think it was after about 10 days, Marty and I, we went home, we grabbed my mom, and, you know, we said we were really concerned. So it was really tough for Dad. And after being retired for 2 years, now he's 45 years of age. I mean, I'm just saying those things, I can't even think about it. But it was hard, and we were really concerned for his health and his well-being. And I guess they sat down, they had a chat, and I guess they had a chat with Bill Dineen. And I think it was maybe 3 days, 4 days later, I couldn't keep up to the guy. It was incredible. Like I said, that's one of my fondest memories in the hockey, was watching him play, especially that first year, but even the second year. He was so good. I mean, he was better at 45 than I ever was, even in my heyday. So, and especially when you have this game shut off, mentally, and you're away from it physically, it's so hard to have a comeback. But even at the age of 45, I think it's damn near impossible. But he did it and won the MVP of the league.
Yeah, the whole WHA, the launching of the whole WHA really kind of revolved around the Howes. I mean, you guys kind of became the story. I mean, other big names came over. I mean, Bobby Hull came over, was certainly a big name. But really, the whole idea of trying to generate some national attention and get people talking about the WHA really did revolve around you guys and coming back and playing. And I remember the first year that you were playing, the first year of the WHA and the Arrows, the Super Bowl was in Houston that year, and they made a big effort to get them, because all the national media comes in for the Super Bowl, and they made a concerted effort to, the Arrows came out and said, hey, listen, all you guys that are here for the Super Bowl, come on over, because we're playing a home game like on Thursday night or something. And so, like, all the reporters that were there for the Super Bowl came to cover the Arrows game, and nobody could quite believe, first of all, that your dad was back playing. But the thing that we all took away from it was not just was he playing, but how well he was playing. I mean, you're right. I mean, he was, at that age, it was just extraordinary to watch the things he was still able to do.
Yeah, I was lucky. I mean, he was right winger. Jimmy, we had young Jimmy Sherrod at center. I was on the left wing, and I ended up with Rookie of the Year that year. But I wouldn't have done it without Gordy being on the right wing. And I know how good he was. And it seems odd to say, but you know, being a father and son, but our chemistry was just phenomenal on the ice. And I would think Gordy, I would have chemistry with just about anybody because he was so good. But we just had a natural chemistry that, just made life a lot easier, made the game a lot easier. Fortunately you had a chance to watch him play. Like I said, I got to watch him for 80 games. And I said, the funny thing about that Super Bowl was, cause I had tickets to go, and I think I'd already gotten soft by that point with the Houston weather, cause I think it was about 30 degrees and 35, something like that, and the crowds and everything else. So I ended up just staying home watching the game on TV. Those were great years for Marty and I. But yeah, but Bobby Hull is the one that put the WHA on the map the first year. So Bobby left Chicago. He was the first big name to go in that league, and then we came the second year of the league. And to have Gordie Howe come in, and wherever we went, we filled buildings just because people wanted to come watch Gordie play. So, he was originally supposed to signed a 1 year playing contract, and then 3 years to work in the front office. Well, he turned that into 7 years of playing hockey.
Yeah,
so,
unbelievable.
Yeah, like I said, I used to call when I was 38, 39, and playing in Detroit and doing rehab twice a week for 2 hours each time, and just to try and keep my back healthy enough where I could play. And I used to call him, I said, how the hell did you ever play till you were 52? So, and to this day, it just flat out amazes me.
One of the things that I find amazing is in 1979, because your dad is still playing and you're still in the WHA, that they had put together a WHA all-star team. And you guys played a three-game series against a Soviet team called Moscow Dynamo. And they put – I think Jacques Demers was your coach. And he put together a line that had Wayne Gretzky at center and you and your dad as the wings. I mean, a line of Gretzky and two Howes. That had to be pretty memorable. And you guys, by the way, swept the series from Moscow.
We did. Yeah, we beat in three straight. But, well, it was funny. So they before the first game, they had us together at the red line for a pitcher, and Gordy on the right side, Wayne at center, and me on the left. And they snapped one or two, and I said, "Okay, it's time for me to exit this photo here," so they could focus on the other two. But tell me what hockey player in the world wouldn't give their left arm to go and do that for three games? So. What a thrill. So, I mean, that's the only chance I really had to play with Wayne, but sit on the bench and just see how hungry he was to score every single shift. Yeah. Gordy was, every bit as good, making plays and stuff. I said the one thing I was sure about was my stick was going to be on the ice. So, because pucks would come from, I wouldn't even expect them sometimes, the puck would be coming my way. And, I definitely remember that. And And the other part, it was a difficult time because I've been divorced for a while now, but my ex father in law, he had passed away. I was down in Houston, and I got up there, so it was I missed his funeral. Came up there and played three games. So, but what a great experience! And like I said, nobody else will ever have that opportunity to play with those two of the greatest players that ever played the game.
We've got to take a break here. When we come back, we're going to get you to the Flyers and talk about all those great years through the 80s when that was such a fun team to watch. Mark Howe is our guest today on Tell Us Your Story, sponsored by Meridian Bank, one of the area's best business banks. Learn why at meridianbanker.com/WIP.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
And up front, Rich and Ron Sutter with Derek Smith. Flyers deep into the left wing corner. Trimper cuts off Howe, falls. Philadelphia to Howe in front, drive, score!
Boy, I'll tell you, Howe just ripped that wrist shot, and Mike Sands was caught back in the net.
Well, we're back with Tell Us Your Story. Mark Howe is our guest, presented by Meridian Bank, one of the area's best business banks. Learn why at meridianbanker.com/WIP. Mark, I'm going to move this forward. You moved to the Hartford Whalers. They joined the NHL in 1979-80. You become a defenseman at that point. You really evolve as a player, even as a defenseman. You're scoring 30-plus goals a year, 70, 80 points a season. And then you suffer one of the more memorable injuries in NHL history. Sorry to take you back there, but in December 1980, you slid into the pointed metal center of the net. You cut a 5-inch gash in your tailbone. You were essentially impaled in an injury that almost ended your career. And I know it kind of led to you moving from the Whalers to the Flyers. Can you take us through how that happened?
Yeah, well, I think, it's a strange circumstance. So, I mean, we're playing a game against the Islanders. It was a 3-on-2. I pivoted. I got bumped from behind accidentally by John Tinelli, who I was teammates with prior. I always say I got skewered on the net. So, mm-hmm. My biggest trauma was I, I kind of knew what happened. I think shock set in right away, but I thought I was dying. I didn't know what had been punctured inside me. And, you know, and the short end of it was I ended up just having a 5.5-inch gash. I came within millimeters of having so many major things go wrong that I got away with. But the downside was, you know, I think that night I was 8th or 9th in scoring in the league as a defenseman. I was really coming into my own. I was 192 pounds. I used to weigh myself every day. And I think 6 weeks later, I played my first game. Actually, it was in the Spectrum against the Flyers, and because I was trying to get to the All-Star game in L.A., and I was 170 pounds. So I was down 22 pounds. And I was horrible. I was a terrible hockey player for at least a year until I started to get some of my strength back. But over that course of that year, the Whalers management, they were disgruntled with me. They didn't think I was working, trying. They thought I, whatever it was. So I had a no trade contract, and I gave them a list. I said, well, you know, you guys are, I've been hearing about you guys wanting to move me. So here's the teams I want to go to. And I gave them the Rangers, the Islanders, the Bruins and the Flyers. I called Harry Sinden that night when I got home because I talked prior about going to Boston before we went to Houston. But Gordy would have had to retire, and I said that wasn't going to be on my resume. And and I told Harry, I gave him the magic words. I said, I'll take a cut and pay. Just get me to Boston. Just get me the hell out of here. Harry called. He said, look, they want 3 first-round picks from me. Like, they're not trading it to me. I can't do it. So I said, thanks. And so then it came down. Then they said they wouldn't trade me. I said, well, you'll find a way. You're going to trade me. And I did all I could to try to undermine things. And in the middle of that summer, I got a call. And they said, well, you've been traded to the Flyers. And then I remember my first phone call was with Ed Snyder, and I answered the phone, and he said, oh, just a minute. He said, I got a peanut butter sandwich in my mouth, and he finished chewing his sandwich. And so, which I thought was great, just call me right down, because I was so jacked. I was so excited, and just to come to be, I really wanted out of Hartford. We didn't mention earlier, but ever since I was like 9 years old, we won national championships every single year. So I was used to winning. I hated losing, absolutely hated losing. And, in Houston we won. We won in with the Marlboros in Toronto. And in Hartford, you know, we got to the finals of 1 year, and then things were falling apart. And I didn't like it. I hated losing. I knew if I went to the Flyers, we were going to have they had a winning tradition. The Broad Street Bullies started all that. So something that was, almost ended my life ended up being one of the most beneficial, lucky things that ever happened to me is, how I look at it. And it ended up resulting in me getting traded to the Flyers. And, like I said, it was 10 of the greatest years that I had in my career.
Well, it was great for you, and it was great for the team because you were just a perfect fit. I mean, you came right in and fit right in with that team. And it was at that point when you arrived, Mark, it was a bunch of young guys that were really just kind of coming into their own. And you wind up very quickly, you got a team that goes to the Stanley Cup Finals. You run into Edmonton, and you can't quite get past them. But, I mean, it seemed like almost immediately you took to Philadelphia and Philadelphia took to you. It just seemed like of all the possibilities that were out there, Philadelphia probably was the best fit.
Well, I think so. I mean, it's everything in Philly was. I remember the first year they came to me, and they said, "We're about team. We don't care what your individual stats are. It's about winning and losing, and that's always how I was brought up." And the teams were good. They were deep. If you went through a little tough patch, there was guys to pat you on the back, pick you up, and, your turn would come. And so it was a group effort, thick and thin. I love playing for Mr. Snyder. He was competitive. He was fiery. He'd come in there. I'm sure he had to be tough to work for sometimes. But I loved having an owner that cared. He was so passionate about the game. And for me as a player, it was great. And everybody talked about the quote unquote Flyers family. I felt like I, and at the time, I had two kids. I ended up having my third one here, Nolan. And, You know, I felt like a Flyers fanboy. I really did. And if there was issues off the ice with something, maybe you needed help with something, you know, you'd make an inquiry, somebody would call, and Mr. Snyder would call you back or somebody, and they did all they could to help. Mm-hmm. So it was, you know, it was, you were in a comfortable spot. It came time to doing a contract. I said, heck, I don't want to leave here. So, you know, it was normally an easy negotiation. But it was, just a great spot and a great group of guys. I mean, that locker room, they kept that locker room really good. They got rid of characters, and they kept the people with character.
So the first 2 years you were here, kind of transitional years, Bob Clark still here, Bill Barber on the team. And the team got knocked out early, and then Mike Keenan comes in. You're 30 at the time. You had already had a very brilliant career, and I read that Keenan kind of challenged you, said that you needed to raise your conditioning, and also maybe helped you raise your self-esteem. Everybody who remembers Mike Keenan in this town remembers him as a real tough guy. What was your relationship with Keenan?
Yeah, when Mike signed, he met everybody, and I'll put it this way: his name came before himself. My brother Marty called. He said, "Oh, do you know who you just hired as coach?" I said, "No." He goes, "Ha ha!" He said, "Boy, you're going to have fun this year." So he was telling me stories about Mike and Rochester, and I said, "Hey, good." So I met Mike, and you know, he had a questionnaire. I filled out the questionnaire, and very last question was, you know, what are your goals? I said, well, my goals are to win a Stanley Cup, and I want to be the Conn Smythe winner. My goal is to always be the best of the best of the best. And, you know, what other goal is there? And then they said, what percentage of chance do you think that is you can pull that off? And I think I wrote down 5% might have been my answer, because that's a pretty big ask. You know, if I'm Wayne Gretzky, I think maybe it's a much higher percentage, but and he said, man, you need to go see a shrink. So conditioning wise wasn't a factor. I always worked out. A lot of people said, I used to have to run back in the day, and I couldn't run. If I ran fast, my knees would get so bad I couldn't train. So I did all my training on a bike. You know, put me on a skates for 2 days and I felt great. So, you know, and Mike, you know, one of the things Mike asked me for, he said, you know, what does he want? I said, well, I'd like to have more ice time. I said, I'm getting like 22 minutes a night. I said, if you give me more, I think I could help this team. And he said, well, you'll get the chance. You just be ready. And I said, I'll be ready. I'm not worried about that. And I think the first exhibition game, he played me 16 and a half minutes of the first period. And I felt wonderful. I know, like every once in a while I'd have a game where I could go out and skate, and I think I could have played 3 games in a row and never broke had a bead of sweat come off me. And that was one of those games. And I said, well, if I didn't pass the test now, I never did. And yeah, I was best player on the ice. And next day of practice, he was so far into my kitchen. You know, that's where Mike was different than other coaches. I don't care what you did the night before. I don't care how good you were. I want you to bring it every single second of every single day. You can't rest on your laurels. And so that's where Mike helped to push me and everybody. You know, I think it ticked off a few people. It had me pretty pissed off a few days. But I always had respect for Mike. He was what the team needed at the time.
Well, I think that's true, Mark. I think he was great for the team, and he was really good for you. I mean, as good a player as you had been from the very first time you started playing, I mean, he raised your level of play to the point where you were one of the elite defensemen in the league. And I guess everybody kind of looks back on your 85-86 season as the high water mark. I mean, what you did that year, I mean, plus 85 for the season is just, I mean, that's just ridiculous. You had 28 goals, and you had 7 shorthanded goals. And that was a year when it just seemed like every time you were on the ice, you made something happen. And that was, when you look back on your career, I mean, is that probably as good as you've ever played over a course of an entire year? I can't imagine there could have been a better one.
Well, I think statistically, I really believe the year that I got hurt in Hartford, like I said, I think I was eighth or ninth in scoring in the league, and you know, at the time in December when I got hurt, and I think that was my best year, and I was plus 34, plus 35 at the time on a team that was just barely over 500. I mean, I was really a good player. I had so much strength and stamina. I wasn't as good defensively. I think by 86, I was better defensively. But I think the thing that really helped me out probably the most was even though I had a really good partner in Glenn Cochran my first couple of years. Glenn and I had great chemistry. But the biggest difference came when Mike came here and he put Brad McCrimmon and I together. So it wasn't me. Brad and I did everything together. We roomed together on the road. We'd have a couple beers together. We ate together. We talked hockey all the time. It was about what we can do to get better. We worked at our craft every day of practice. Even if we had a really good game, maybe you had one, two good scoring chances against, even not even a goal against. We'd try to analyze what we did wrong, and we learn how to play different players differently. So if I was 85, Brad was plus 83, and I think over the course of the 3 years we played together, we were both plus rated, we're somewhere around 190.
Yeah.
So I think in NHL stats, I think I'm plus 400 or whatever. Brad's like plus 460 or something in his career. So it was something. But we had great chemistry. And then, after Brad got moved, I ended up with another really good partner in Shel Samuelson. So I was very lucky. I had some really, really good partners during my time in Philly.
Yeah, your days with McCrimmon were that was an amazing pairing. Mark Howe is our guest on Tell Us Your Story. Mark, we got about 10 minutes to go, and I do have to ask you to give me memories of one of the saddest days in Philadelphia sports, November 10th, 1985, and Pelly Lindbergh. What do you remember about that day?
I remember I got a phone call early in the morning from Dave Pullen. He informed me that Pelly was brain dead, and such a sad thing. And but basically the night before was the whole team pretty well had gotten together, but there was two players not there. There was myself and Eddie Hosmer. Eddie was trying to get on the ice. Mike wouldn't let him on the ice, and it was for his 400 game bonus. Eddie was all upset. So I grabbed Eddie. We went out by ourselves, and I got Eddie to calm down. And Eddie and I had been friends for a few years. And we settled in, and then we went home. And so I was sound asleep, and I got the news, and just so devastated. I had to lose. You always look at the person first, such a wonderful, wonderful person. And, the hockey part of it, that always comes second when it comes to that. But it was a difficult time. It was a really difficult time for everybody. And, but I know something that's really, really talked about is, a little while after that, Timmy Kerr's wife had passed away. I remember we were in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And for me, actually, that was probably more devastating for me just because, I was married. I had three kids. Timmy was married, had three children. You're at a stake in your career where, you're maybe getting near the backside of your prime years. And, what do you do? What do you do? And I remember spending some time with Timmy but for me personally, as tough as, a loss it was for losing Pelly, and he made a mistake. We all made mistakes. We were all fortunate enough. We got away with ours. He did not. But Kathy Kerr was taken far too soon, and it was just devastating to Timmy.
It really was. It was an emotional time for everybody close to the team. But in 87, bring up a rookie goaltender named Ron Hextall. Comes up, hardly anybody knows very much about him. He comes up, starts the opening game against Edmonton. You win the game, and that just starts a team on a run that takes you back to the playoffs and then to ultimately the Stanley Cup Finals. And the Flyers and the Oilers have one of the most dramatic seven-game finals, I think, that certainly I've ever seen, and probably one of the greatest in NHL history. I mean, Mark, your team was so beat up. I mean, you had so many guys playing hurt. I don't know how you got a team on the ice. But night after night, you guys willed your way to win those games, took it to a seventh game in Edmonton, finally lost the seventh game in Edmonton. But it was one of the most dramatic series as I can remember, and I think I will always remember the Game 6 back at the Spectrum when J.J. Daigneau scores that goal to send it to a seventh game. I don't think I've ever heard that building louder.
No, I remember I was sitting on a bench, and I the building was shaking. I remember looking up at the roof, and, yeah, I like people that run into J.J. I know he was coaching some in the American League when I was scouting. I would run into him quite a bit, and we said, we always talked about that goal. And J.J. said, you know, people bring it up to him all the time, and you know, that goal for me was probably the highlight of my years in Philadelphia, because it just was so emotional and the crowd was going nuts. You know, it's going to get you to Game 7. And you know, what a great experience. And we go to Game 7. I always tell people, I said, yeah, if Hexie would have just made two more saves. So I always say that sarcastically. He was so good. So he won the MVP. And like I said, I was basically playing on one leg. I had such a bad Charlie horse, and if it wasn't for Pat Croce, I would have missed half the series. And Dave Poulin, every day you watch needles going in his ribs and trying to play, and all the, there's so many guys out of the lineup. And
Timmy Kerr had a really bad shoulder.
Timmy Kerr trying to gut it out. Yeah, and when you get to that point, everybody's beat up, and so it was. But yeah, you remember those years, the guys in that locker room. Yeah, you took so much pride in wearing that jersey. And, like I said, just an absolutely wonderful, great group of guys.
It is said that Edmonton team is the greatest team in the history of hockey. I think there's a good argument for that. It is said that you guys hanging with them for seven games is one of the greatest feats ever. But you didn't win a cup, and you came close several times. Is that tough for you? A guy who grew up, you know, in the business, grew up with your dad, and you yourself came very close to winning cups, but didn't. When you retire, is it unfulfilled, or is it just something that you live with?
Well, obviously you got to live with it, but yeah, you're unfulfilled. Like I said, from the time I remember playing hockey in the driveway, and when you go down and score, you score the game-winning Stanley Cup goal. That's just what you do when you were a kid growing up. And your thoughts of I would have never ever left the Flyers had we won a Stanley Cup. Mm-hmm. So the reason I left to go to Detroit was because they were an up-and-coming team and I wanted to have a chance. We got to the finals my last year. They ended up winning 2 years later, but I love living in the area. I love living in New Jersey. I like being at the shore in the summer. I love being a Flyer. I took so much pride in being a Flyer. Had I won, I wouldn't have left. The only reason I left was to chase a cup. I didn't get that cup. So yeah, I obviously that's your goal. That's what you want. I didn't get it. And you move on. So yeah, you have to learn to live with it, but yeah, sure. It hurts. And then I remember when I won in Detroit, or I didn't win, but when the team won in 97, they won their first cup. And people asked me, and said, you know, are you disappointed you didn't win? I said, hell no. I said, I was partners with Nick Litz from one year and Vladimir Konstantinov another year. I went down, I got a pitch with my son, Nolan, and those two guys in the cup. And it's not about me. I always tell my kids, it ain't about you. I was so happy for them because they achieved something that I hadn't done. And that's what it's all about. So, and then, you know, and I know we ended up winning four cups with me in the front office as a scout, and people said, how great is it? And I said, well, yeah, it's great, but it ain't the same as being on the ice. Like, there's no comparison. I mean, maybe for the general manager who puts it all together, but when you're out scouting, you're doing your job, but there's nothing like being in the locker room with, and a lot of times it took 26, 27 players to get to that point. And, I know we won a couple years down in Houston, and we got to, I think I went to the finals three times in the NHL, and I think two or three more times in the WHA. So I think I had seven trips to the finals in 22 years. So, nice guys finished second. So I guess that's what happened to me too many times. But I'll take that over so many things. But yeah, I miss not having a cup. But hey, you move on and you continue to strive to get better at everything you do in your life from that day forward.
Well, so many honors after hockey for you. I mean, you get the Flyers Hall of Fame in 2001, the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame in 2003, the Hockey Hall of Fame itself in 2011. And then in 2012, in March of 2012, you get the great honor of, and Glenn mentioned at the beginning of the interview, where you get your number, the number two is retired. And you have the ceremony at the arena, and the crowd gives you the big ovation. Your dad's there to see you honored. And that must have been, in a career full of highlights, that must have been pretty near the top.
Well, yeah. So many of my memories, around my career revolve around my father and my brother. For me, the ultimate was, getting into the Hockey Hall of Fame. I never, ever thought I'd get there. I knew I was close, but I consider the Hockey Hall of Fame something that's for the elites. I mean, the Gretzky's, the Lemieux's, the Messier's, the Trotches, the Bossy's, the Potvin's, the Bobby Clark's, the Bernie Perrott's, those type of guys. I didn't think I was, I'm not in that class. I know I was a good player, but what really that I was most happy about was Dad was still alive. My mom had passed. But I got a chance to make it about, thanking my family, thanking my father. And that was such an emotional, thing, and it was such a shock. And and then I think a byproduct of me getting in there was, I know the Flyers were hurt. I think they were disappointed in me when I left as a free agent in 92 to go to Detroit. And I was always upfront and honest. I said, hey, I want to win a cup. And if you don't like me because I'm still hungry to win a Stanley Cup, then don't like me. I can't do anything about that, but I'm going to pursue my goal. And I think there was some hard feelings when I left but I think I know when I gave my speech, and I meant every bit of it. Part of my speech was I said, the orange and black of Philly will be a part of me forever and always will be. That's how fond I was of that team, of wearing that uniform. It took so much pride in. I think that helped to maybe sway people a little bit and say, hey, maybe he did like it here. So, it was a tremendous honor bestowed upon me to have my jersey raised in the rafters. And like I said, I had some wonderful teammates. I had some great partners. And it's tough to be singled out sometimes. But when they do it, you accept it. And you make sure you thank all the people that helped you to get to that point along the way.
I thought you had a great quote. I thought you had a great quote in which you said, I came to Philadelphia as my father's son. And I've left as my own man, which I think is a really great description. I mean, when you came in, everybody talked about, the son of Gordie Howe. But by the time you left, you had established a legacy really all your own.
I don't know. But like I said, even, God rest his soul, Jay Greenberg, when we did a book together, Jay said, so what do we name the book? I said, it's easy, Gordie Howe's son. I go, and I wasn't one to read newspapers, but every once in a while you'd see a headline that said Gordie Howe's son. I said, hey, that's just who I am. So, I think it was more the perception on the outside. It wasn't so much my perception. I knew I was a pretty good hockey player, and I knew in Hartford, I was emerging as a player, and especially playing as a defenseman there, not on my dad's line anymore. And, and I was one of the go-to guys on that team. And then I came to Philadelphia, but now I'm away from Gordy. I'm in a bigger market. I think people looked at me in a different light and, maybe had a chance to maybe appreciate, my abilities a little bit more. And, I think, but what made it so special, like I said, was Mr. Snyder, the way he ran this club, the prior players, the standards they set, and being in that locker room with a great group of guys was, I just something that I'll always cherish.
Well, Mark Howe, I think the fans and everybody cherishes and admires what you did here. It's very special. It's been an honor to have you as our guest today, sponsored by Meridian Bank, one of the area's best business banks. Learn why at meridianbanker.com/WIP. Mark Howe, thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for all those great seasons.
All right, Glenn, thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, well, there you go. That was a fun one, Ray. Just a great player, great story, great lineage, some terrific highlights.
Yes.
Enjoy that one.
I did, too. I did, too. And you know, real gentleman. He always was. During the time that he was here, played 10 seasons for the Flyers. Still holds the NHL record for shorthanded goals by a defenseman. Mm-hmm. So that record still stands, 28. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, that's great.
And you look at his career, 10 years at the Flyers, he finishes as a plus 351.
Yeah, it's amazing.
What a career.
By the way, people have asked me, you know, I want to hear some of the past ones you've done. I got a lot of feedback, of course, with last week with Jim Gardner. Where can I hear it? And all of them are podcast. You can go to the Odyssey app. I always put them on my social media, or if you want to ever find one, just Google my name, Ray's name, and the name of the person we interviewed, and you can find every Tell Us Your Story there. We do have a couple of fun ones coming up.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.